On this episode of Mapping Tech and Public Safety, Chris and I finally get a chance to have a law enforcement GIS unit so we can learn about how GIS is used within their department. Hit that subscribe button and click the bell so you never miss an episode and are notified when a new episode is released.
Hello, this is everybody. This is Chris and Steve with Mapping Tech and Public Safety. This is episode 16, and we're honored today to have actually our first law enforcement guest, which is something both Steve and I have talked about for quite some time. Patrick Alexander and Lieutenant Freddie Croft from the Houston Police Department. We first became aware of them through an ESRI webinar talking about some of the things that they've done in the department. And in a short period of time, they've done some amazing things. One of the things I'm really interested about what they have to say is how they advocate for the use of GIS in the department from bottom up and top down approach. Patrick, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background. How do you fell into GIS in the police department?
Hey, Chris, Steve, thanks for having me. I'm the GIS manager for the Houston Police Department. I've been with the department for about 12 years now. I initially came into the department as a crime analyst, which is for professional civilians, that's kind of like their entry point into the department to begin with. But we use GIS, obviously, crime analyst. That's how I knew that the department was first using it. But I'm also in the Army Reserve, and I learned GIS when I was an Army officer doing military intelligence. That was my first foray into GIS and using it. Fast forward to the police department and moving over to a more specialized crime analysis unit where I could use GIS like every day. It's when I really realized that the department had it, what we could do with it, and where to go with it. And at the time, it was kind of really outdated. So that's kind of where I fell in. I guess we can talk about that a little bit later.
I'm Freddie Croft. I've been on HPD for 9 years now. The majority of the time was not spent doing admin or GIS. I've moved around the department a handful of times, different positions, investigative, some proactive. But right before Hurricane Harvey hit, I was in charge of a divisional crime analysis unit. Our department is broken down into a lot of divisions, and then that area of town is just kind of managed by that division. Over there on the crime analysis unit, I was introduced to GIS, and then Harvey happened and kind of uprooted things. But then after Harvey came back and I got back into GIS or just doing crime analysis, I started learning the ESRI software and saw that, oh man, a lot of the problems that we had during Hurricane Harvey, I could have done a lot of problem solving using GIS, especially web GIS. And so I kind of started going down that route. Since I was a supervisor, I had more time to spend on new projects and things like that. And so I started just taking a lot of the problems that I had ran into as a police officer and trying to create solutions for that. The first one I did was even just mapping out apartment complexes in the area that I had, putting in gate codes. Because, I mean, y'all probably have that same issue as firefighters. Yeah. CAD's gate codes are out of date. And I noticed that a lot of officers were keeping notepads or even, you know, text files on their computers of the gate code for those apartments.
Yeah.
But man, it'd be really nice to have a way that we could all share this information. That's kind of how GIS started for me, along with just doing the crime mapping out of our West Side Division. And then as I was learning how to use the software, I kept bothering Patrick, who was on our GIS unit.
Right.
How do I do this? Hey, how do I do this? Eventually, he's like, hey, you just need to come up here and learn up here. That happened about a year and a half ago when I came up to the GIS unit and been using it since.
Can you guys tell us about getting the Houston PD to buy into GIS? I had heard that you would use this top-down, bottom-up approach. How you kind of got Houston PD interested in more of a GIS usage within the department?
I'll start off and hand it over to Freddie. From a historical perspective, HPD has been using GIS for about 15 years. Ever since the city of Houston had our ELA, Enterprise License Agreement with ESRI, we had the desktop products, but it was just at the desktop level. So we had crime analysts predominantly are the only ones who were using desktop GIS, creating, like Freddie mentioned before, maps to be printed out as PDFs. And the crime analysts may be doing some spatial analysis against it. For a number of years, we had one GIS server that was up there running one service that was feeding another call for service application that was rarely used or and rarely worked. Web GIS became more of a predominance that we looked at it and say, hey, there's a better way to do this. And we can get this GIS more accessible to other members, like almost everyone in the department, really. And so that's kind of really where the genesis of hey, we need to move away from, not move away from desktop per se, but it can't be our priority. And we want to bring WebJS to the department to really use everything it can do in all different aspects of the department. Freddie, if you want to talk about how we decided that we needed to get people more to buy into that.
We've taken a two-sided approach to onboarding people, members of our department, either from the front line or from our executive staff. One of the things that we talk about a lot is our unit, we try to solve problems that happen in the department. Now, we don't try to solve problems, we don't create a solution and then go look for a problem. We knew that our chiefs and our executive staff, we do comm stat at our department. They're always, every month, they're pulling stats, and a lot of times they're the same stats. So they want to metric out and see how they're doing. Instead of accessing an access database, pulling these stats, that Patrick deployed our recent crime bureau, where it was just a service where they can get on and they can see all the crime that happened in the last 7 days, the last 30 days, and it updates as officers are submitting the reports. We just started to look at the things that our executives were always asking for or always needing and started trying to come up with solutions for them. We have really good buy-in from our commander, and so he comes up with a lot of ideas of, this is a report that gets done manually every week and it's just in this tabular form. Can we do it spatially and allow them to get the data they want? So that's how a lot of our top-down projects come about. It's just looking at what our executives are asking for or needing and then creating solutions for them. The bottom-up approach is, it's been kind of twofold. It's one, just using a lot of the problems that I saw as a patrol officer, like things that I ran into that were difficulties, like mapping out where flooding's happening whenever, because Houston, we flood a lot, and layouts of schools or where the gangs are operating or even just what's going on in the beat that you're assigned to, and then creating solutions for those. But with the fact that we've been able to get out there, we have a lot of these officer level groups coming to us now and saying, hey, well, we're doing these tasks on pen and paper. Can we make a map out of this? And then we sit down with them. We treat ourselves as like a small business.
Yeah.
We do that a lot. I have a business background degree and Patrick has experience with doing project management. We sit down with them and we take a really professional approach to getting their business requirements, seeing exactly what they want so that we're not just giving half-baked a solution. We want to make sure that what we give them is what they envisioned from the get-go. And so with that, it just kind of propagates through, because in the department, when somebody has a cool toy, they show other people and they want that toy or they want access. And then it kind of just, and then they'll give us ideas. Well, hey, it'd be really cool if we could do this with the same application. A lot of our applications are almost like living organisms where they evolve and grow as time goes on. And we look at some of our original dashboards or web apps and they've changed multiple times over the last year to be at their current iteration. And we make sure that we actually relook at a lot of our projects. We're in that stage now of taking inventory of what all we have and is it being used, how is it being used, and how can we improve upon it? That's kind of the two-sided approach.
Yeah, I think Freddie and I decided a while ago when we were first kind of, when I brought him on and said, hey, you know what, we need to treat this unit as like a tech startup, right? And so we really took that approach and said, okay, what are all the things that we need to do to like market our unit? What are all the things that we need to do to reach out to other folks and all that kind of stuff? One of the things was, like Freddie was mentioning about top-down approach, not only was it doing projects specifically for exec staff, but it was also going to those comp staff meetings and command staff meetings and giving a presentation to the entire command staff and say, hey, and again, like Freddie mentioned, our commander really had, we had that buy-in from him, that executive level buy-in and his boss buy-in. It was one of those things where it was almost like a GIS update. To just get us out there and to have the other commanders and chiefs recognize the work that we were doing. So he's highlighting that, and we were also highlighting things that their folks could use, not just them. Now, the bottom-up approach Freddie was mentioning is not only doing reaching out and going to projects, but I mean, Freddie and other staff members would actually go out to crime analysis units or other patrol stations, and he would literally sit down and show them, right, this is how you do this. This is how you access the portal. This is our website. But it was a lot of hands-on approach of hitting the line officers and hitting command staff and then everyone in between with some investigative units and stuff. So that's kind of how we did it.
That's awesome. I really like the idea that you're treating your unit as a startup instead of, we all work in government. We all probably are well aware that we tend to be, a lot of parts of the government tend to be more overplanned things and overbuild things and they tend to fall apart. So I'm kind of curious, one, how do you test, especially from the bottom up, approach? Like, if there's an idea that comes up, how do you go through a testing process, like an agile development process with the troops? And do they get it, understand it and stuff? And then is there an example of something that you could share where you'll say, oh, we're not doing that ever again type thing, or how we handle it? Is there some, like a lesson learned on the personnel side that, you know, we needed to do that a little bit differently in how we implemented it or shared that or tested that?
I would say one of the biggest things, I have a project wall of all these ideas that we can do, and we get brought up outside of us. We actually have a project form where they can put in a ticket if anybody has an idea. And that's one of the ways we try to make ourselves accessible. One of the things that we found that you really got it, well, that we really have to do is stay on top of following up on the project. So when we make a project and we give it to a unit, we go and teach people. So many people in our department are so busy that they don't always give us feedback. They don't tell us what they like and dislike. And if they don't like it, we a lot of times don't hear about it. And then we just see that the project, the application isn't being used, it died, or that person transferred and we didn't even know it and it never got handed over. That's something we've just now really started working in. And we're talking about it actually daily on how are we going to almost force feedback or at least make sure that we're prompting it and making sure that the application is, or whatever the solution was that we made, is doing what they needed. Because we had some early projects that were made and then were used a little bit at the beginning. And I think it was almost like somebody had an idea and it was a cool project. It was a cool toy. They showed it off and then it kind of, their other duties got taken over. They got busy with other things and they kind of, the project fell off. And it's like, okay, if we would have stayed on top of this, if we would have made sure that other people were trained on how to use it, would it have been more successful? That's one thing, definitely following up and providing material that new people can onboard with instead of just expecting people to pick it up and use it, actually getting hands-on and teaching them.
Are you actually doing training with the field personnel or demos of your products?
These are all things that are constantly evolving with us. So originally it was whoever asked for the product or whatever it is that they needed done, we would make it, show them how to use it, and that would be kind of that. But now we're creating solutions that are meant for the entire department. And so we're having to go about how do we train 5,000 officer employees on how to use this application? How do we get them to use it? And how, or even just aware of it? How do we steer them in the right direction? That's kind of where our website is focused on. All right, how can we best drive people to the information they need? But as far as training goes, we've even taught, in the past, we've made just technical documents, an email on, here's how you do it with screenshots of the little, whatever widgets in there or whatever workflows. But we're talking about, okay, maybe it would be best to get some recording software and make a quick 1-minute video on how to use the application and actually screen, show them how to work it. Or even, and we have, right now we have a lot of technical Word documents that will hyperlink inside the application for a demo, click up here and it'll open the Word or PDF document. But we're constantly trying to look at better ways to train them because it's difficult. We have 5,000 employees across 3 different shifts, but some of those are 3 or 4 different shifts on active shift. We have 4 different groups on evening shift, and we're spread out across 500 square miles, so give or take, I think. But that's been one of the harder challenges, is making sure everybody has the training that they need on it.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about some of the GIS applications that you use on a daily operations and what you use them for? I heard Hurricane Harvey, your gang units. I'm not sure if I'm going to get this right. Special facility locations like pharmacies. And also I wanted to touch a little bit, Chris and I have talked about this quite a bit, about pre-planning. Pre-planning in the fire service is obviously going to be a little bit different. We want to pre-plan stuff like fire hydrants, standpipe locations, and roof access. What are some of the pre-planning tools that you would use in law enforcement?
I would say on the daily operations, ones that get used daily are, we have a KPI, a key performance indicators, that give all of our command staff all of the information they need, homicides, robberies, you know, it taps into RMS and parses all the information that they need daily and allows them to see their area, their beats. They also have a crime viewer where they can see, as an officer submits a report, it pops up on the map and they can actually read, they can click and read the report from that map. They can do all the filtering they need. So that's one that gets used daily. We have in our department, what's called a significant event process where if something happens that it's a big event that the commanders or the chiefs need to know about, right now it's always been an email that goes out from our command center and they say, this happened at this time. So that's something that we've been, it was the last 2 weeks we've been working on is redoing that system. Instead of having an email that just goes out and they track them on an Excel file on just different lines, we created a survey 123 where they can put in the information and it puts it on the map and it has a lot more different things that if they choose, it's a freeway closure, it brings in different information. If it's a shooting, it brings in different information. That's definitely a smart form that allows the commanders and the chiefs then to really get the information they need. So those are two big ones. Those are used multiple times throughout the day. With COVID, we've been looking at ways to track employees that are here or not here due to different reasons. At first, there was all the travel restrictions. We've been using it a lot on different dashboards to track like just basic data entry so that they could parse it out quickly, replacing a lot of Excel forms with survey 123s. So that it's stored in databases. As far as the gang editor and the high value targets, those are more pre-planning. Now the gang editor, that is still used by like our gang division. They're just kind of tracking general areas that they see gang activity in. It's held for their unit. They kind of use that for the most part, but we have talked about, okay, and that's something we plan to revisit is how can we use this throughout the department? How can analysts start analyzing crime trends against these gang patterns? On the other pre-planning one, it was a project that got started and it's one that, again, we have to follow up with because we've had personnel changes, but pre-planning responses to active shooters. But we have the information from the city as far as where the schools are located. If an active shooter were to happen here, once the threat is stopped, how do we manage that scene? That's a tool that we've gotten out there. But that's another one that we've had a difficult time. We have one unit that came to us and they said, we have this problem, but how do we onboard all of the other divisions?
It was one of those classic GIS solution cases where they came to us with a binder full of paper maps, data, and it was all printed out. Basically, like Freddie was saying, is that we digitized that for them and made it spatially aware. The third thing was more of, if a active shooter goes down, we just want this to pre-plan where we're going to stage our officers, not necessarily for the response, but basically to, because as you're well aware of, as first responders, everyone's in first inclination is to like rush to the scene, right?
Yeah.
And so they were thinking like, okay, well, while everybody is trying to have a clear head or may not have a clear head, if we use this pre-planning guide, here's where we're going to put these officers to block other officers from like gumming up like the ambulances that need to come in. You know, this is where Lifelight's going to be. This is where like media will be. Their idea was to have it accessible to everybody in their vision. It's not something that would necessarily bring up while the event is happening, but they could look at it prior to the event and say, okay, I generally have a good idea of where I can't go for the school or where the key is for the school, where the nearest route to the highway to get to the hospital is. That's kind of where that came about. Like Freddie was saying, it's been frustrating because it coming from binders of books from this one unit to giving them a really slick application that they could use to kind of like it dropped off, right? And maybe COVID-19 had a lot to do with that. We'll have to revisit that and see where we are, but it was one unit and one patrol division, whereas Freddie was saying that this is probably something that all the patrol divisions could use. It's going back and we have to reset and get back to our objectives and goals. One of this is to look at this and see if it can expand throughout the department, which we know it can.
Yeah. Kind of related to that, not only pre-planning, but I'm sure you've experienced this where somebody will come to you and they have a problem and they think technology could fix it. But in reality, it's not technology that needs to be fixed. It's like how you do the tactics or process. Do you find that you experience that a little bit where, hey, like for example, the pre-plans, we have a lot involved with a lot of our active shooter stuff as well. And sometimes when you get to the subjective decision-making of how somebody would handle an incident, hand that plan off to somebody else, they'd say, no, I don't agree with that. Do you find that you have to like set boundaries on how you do something, like create data and information that's usable and easily accessible, not accessible, but easily understood by the rest of the department? How do you do that and how do you negotiate that with different groups? Especially, you got a unique situation. You have the technical and the field person working together to articulate that.
One of the things that we make sure is we're getting them the right solution for the problem they have. Mm-hmm. Because we've been out there, we've been marketing ourselves. We've had a lot of units come to us and say, we have this database. We want to have it done a different way. Can GIS do this? And we found multiple times that we're not the best answer.
Yeah.
Setting up a good SQL, you know, system or an Access database or something like that. In those type of situations, we've actually acted as almost like project managers, where we go in there, help capture the business needs of their project, and then get them into the point of contact with our technology department and help them get their project started. We're not going to take on a problem just because we can solve it if there's a better solution already out there. As far as when we develop the applications, at least from the ones that we've made so far, a lot of times, and you've seen this on some of our projects, is we're creating these applications that allow them to make their solution. For example, the active shooter is, we're not the experts on how to respond to these events, at least our unit is not. But we're creating this tool that the unit that is the expert, they can make it themselves. Same with the gang areas. We're not the ones, we'll tell them, we'll try to guide them through the process of how things might look better, if it was symbolized a certain way, explaining to them what's available. But a lot of the stuff we make is allowing crowdsourcing of the information. So it puts the ability to create in their hands just digitally. So that's...
Self-service GIS.
Yeah. Actually. We try not to get too much involved in how the applications should work. If they know how they want it to work, we try to make it that way. Now, we might make recommendations because they might not know some of the stuff.
But yeah. I was going to say, like, is there any time where, especially with you, Freddie, somebody comes in, hey, I got this great idea. And you know how it is. It's like a great idea that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you have to say, hey, guys, listen, let's bring it down just a little bit. Is there like examples of that? Or how do you articulate that? Especially because like on the fire side, there's times where I'll say, no, that's a great idea. Well, no, I'll say that's a dumb idea. let's just call it that way. It's like, I'll give a prime example. It'd be awesome if, you know, if there was an arrow on my fire engine, you know, heads up display, it gives me directions to the call and stuff and do this. And then like one time I replies, well, it'd be awesome if there was a robot that just came out of that fire engine and put the fire out for me. And they go, what? You're halfway there, dude. We call it firemanship, but you know, like law enforcement, there's probably a similar term. Actually, no, I'm related to cops, but I don't know. You want technology to do your job. That's really should be your street sense.
I would say that we do that by managing expectations, right? When we meet with them and going over discovery, we'll try to find out what they want. And knowing what we can do and what the software can do, we can say, that's just not going to happen. We're maybe not the right people to do this for you because it's not inherently a spatial location issue, right? We do it that way. And then we also discovered that a lot of times they're not really quite sure what they're asking for. So we have to kind of help them reach or help them get to the point where they think in their head or they'll see a presentation that we gave to the command staff and they're like, oh, that's amazing. And they're like, I want that same thing. Well, we don't think that's the right thing for what you want to do. They just want it to look like that. We have to figure out, and it's a lot of navigating and saying, I hear what you're saying, but it sounds like this is what you want instead. And then kind of show, and then that's what I do want. We kind of have to talk them through the process and really get into their head and their workflow to see what they really truly want as opposed to what they saw. Managing expectations and then just having the conversation with them. Because a lot of times with GIS, the technology, they're not really quite sure what it can do or what it can't do. They just know what they've seen from somebody else. Because our commander's really good about sending off like links to dashboards and things to the whole command staff. And they're exposed to it. We'll get feedback from that commander saying, can you do this? And we'll have to say, we'll have to have a meeting with them and really ask, what are you looking for? And that kind of helps.
There's one that comes to mind that they knew what they wanted. The end solution was going to be a GIS solution, was showing in real time, basically where every officer was, allowed you to see what certifications do they have. Are they bilingual? Basically linking multiple databases together into this one GIS service. And for that project, multiple of the applications that you'd have to tie into were going to have to be reworked themselves. And then our policies on how information is entered was going to have to be redone. And then it was going to have to do significant training on how to use the new systems. There was one that was real-time staffing, and because of how many moving parts, this is not a GIS solution here. This is a much bigger broader project. Now, we show them this could be the end solution. If we had these databases working, but this is something that's going to require a lot more input from a lot of different people if that's the route we want to take. Now, we're just the delivery method on that. Mm-hmm. We've had a few projects that are wanting to change entire scope of operations. GIS is just the delivery method. You have to go talk to a whole lot of other people who have more than just butter bars on their shoulders to get that done.
I've never done law enforcement GIS, but I've always thought was interesting was the amount of data that you get, how you could kind of look at trends. And what I mean by that is crime specifically. In the fire service and EMS, that's a little bit hard. Try to bring in data like fire locations and look at trends. There is some work that can be done there, but with law enforcement, there's just so much crime and so many categories of crime, whether it be from a homicide to a grand larceny to domestic violence. And you could actually like look at these patterns. I had seen Hurricane Harvey and some of the trends that you were finding. Can you talk a little bit about that with the crime sprees and how you analyzed that and located it?
That's probably one of the funnest things about, I think, law enforcement GIS is there is just a ton of information. If you want to go start looking down a rabbit hole, and we have some analysts that do, you can really find some interesting bits of information. Where are things happening, how time of day affects a lot of how human behavior affects, how the environment affects an area. You'll have an area that is adjacent to another area, and one area is just terrible as far as crime goes, and violent crime, and then very close by environment, and it's not as bad. So
and we see our crime analysis unit doing those type of projects. They kind of look at that and dive deep into the data, utilizing they start with GIS to do it. So it's interesting to see what they do with the data and how are they using GIS to get to some endpoint with that type of project they're doing.
We're on the same floor as our crime analysis. We have a big crime analysis. We call it a big crime analysis. It's our crime analysis for the command staff. And it's for the big stuff, the big citywide events, or just stuff going on in the entire city. But each division has their own crime analysis unit that analyzes their trends because our city is so diverse and one part of town response is going to be completely different than a different part of town. And the problems that face certain areas are drastically different than other areas. During Hurricane Harvey, like you mentioned, that is the really cool thing about law enforcement data is all of it's time enabled. We capture so many data points. Every day we're trying to get more data sets as well. Where are our apartments? Where are our liquor stores? Where are our parks, schools? All of these things play into how and why crime happens. Now, that's way beyond my scope of expertise talking about the statistical analysis on how behavior and all that affects crime. But just being able to map out crime and time enabling it and seeing driving into certain areas. And our crime analysis unit, I think it was in the presentation in our previous webinar about our micro zones. You know, one of our analysts broke out the city into these hex grids that were designed to be quickly drivable by a patrol officer. And he was just looking at where is crime happening historically. And he went through multiple models where he tried to weigh crime differently depending on what type of crime it was. He weighed it differently on the recency of the crime, or he even tried to factor in seasonality. And then he would forecast. So he would say, I looked at 2018 to 2019. He did an analysis. And then he said, based on this, where should my crime in 2020 be? And then he looked and see how accurate he was. And he ran down multiple models. It was really cool to watch because he would come to us if he had GIS when wasn't working like he wanted it to, or when one of the tools wasn't working like he wanted to, he would come to us. We have to see it kind of grow and evolve, and it's still growing. That's the really fun part about using GIS with law enforcement data, how experienced your user is, your analyst, and what data sets do you have.
Steve, what you were saying is that with crime data and what Freddie was saying is that it's all spatial, right? But it's super important where it's happening. And that can tell you a lot. That Hurricane Harvey example that Freddie had, I mean, that was him mapping crime in the division that he worked at and found all these break-ins. It's very, people are visual. It's easy to see where these things are happening and grouping them together and deep diving into what's going on, what vehicle type and color and all that kind of stuff. So it all plays together, I think, just is why we love GIS so much is that you can bring all these things together, and just in the map component of it kind of just is the magic, right? And it's where it all comes together. And that's kind of what Freddie's experience was with that bird of habitation that he was working on, because he saw the patterns.
I've talked about for years, even when I was with the fire department, is you can add all these stats, spreadsheet, well, back in the day, Access databases and Oracle databases. You're looking at all this data. What does it really mean? Patrick, I think you just said the perfect word. You know, the magic is putting that on a map and actually being able to visualize this. I used to do that a lot with just response times. We'd have printouts of response times from when the dispatcher gave it to the unit, when the unit actually started responding to the scene, when the unit got on the scene, when the unit left the scene. You're looking at all these numbers, and it makes sense, but when you see it on a map based on a specific area, it really just comes to light. Am I having a problem with a response area, a specific precinct or battalion, regardless to your agency or the types of boundaries?
It really gives you a better understanding, too. HPD, just like any other place, is broken into beats and districts and divisions. The world doesn't happen with these boundaries. The crime doesn't adhere to divisional boundaries. Fires the same way. It's just arbitrary based on manpower, really, how we divide up the city. By having a spreadsheet, you look at, for example, what we have this a lot. Where are the top apartments for crime? If you're looking at the top five, well, if you're just looking at incidents that happen at the apartment, you might miss all of the ones that happen right outside or right across the street that still might be related to that apartment complex, or maybe that apartment's having issues because of a nearby something else, a business. They're just getting the residuals. When you're able to put it on the map, you can kind of get rid of all of those artificial boundaries that we report on so much, or even just the 100 block. You're able to actually get a much better view of what's going on. Humans are visual creatures. By being able to visualize it and see that area is substantially worse than this area, we need to go check that out. Which you might miss if you're adhering to all these boundaries. Criminals know boundaries as well. We know that they know where the county lines are. They know what county they're in, and depending on the punishments or what their history is in that area, they'll go in different places because they know, okay, this place is really busy and the response times are slower, or things like that.
I think that's why we were excited to really embrace WebGIS, because not only is it just being able to map these points out, right, and the visual clustering that goes with that, then just having access to all the attribute data behind it and either a pop-up or the dashboard that corresponds with those locations, that really opened everything up for us. Freddie's example for Hurricane Harvey, he could have easily did that in desktop and just printed it out, but he was able to bring that into ArcGIS Online, not only map it, but then we got all the attribute data behind it and things like that. For us, just creating the dashboards, all these web applications to help count things has just been invaluable.
You've seen the pattern and stuff. They're talking about adjoining jurisdictions or counties. Have you implemented any plans or processes to start sharing with neighboring law enforcement agencies?
Right now, it is difficult. We're all on different RMS systems. Every law enforcement, just in general, is protective of data.
That's true.
It's getting better as technology is really just inundating everything. And right now, it's hard. We do a lot of emailing. There's some email groups where analysts will, if they need something, do you have a contact with this department or this and that. But even GIS, we've done some local events here, and a lot of the police departments have come to us and said, oh, that's really cool. We're trying to start up our own WebGIS. I think right now, a lot of departments go the closed approach. Our enterprise is on our own servers behind our firewall, so it makes it difficult to share information. Now, luckily, we have a very good partnership within our city and our other city departments, and Patrick can talk more to that. We share very well within the city's organization.
We have bi-weekly GIS manager meetings that all the department GIS managers get together and discuss the overall enterprise GIS and what's going on technology-wise, data centers moving, et cetera, and talking about our ELA and or problems that we have that's unique to our department that maybe they might have a solution. It's really good for collaboration, kind of like sharing ideas. For example, we want to tie in data from Public Works. I can easily reach over to my colleague at Public Works and say, hey, can we get your feature service for barricades? and close roads, and that will, we can bring that into our system and use in our application. Meetings like that help, and obviously we can do that via email, but face-to-face certainly helps with those type of things. Regional-wise, Freddie and I and the unit try to participate in GIS functions, GIS Day. We'll have presentations or just get the word out there. We'll volunteer with other GIS events as well. A lot of times they're kind of surprised that police has a presence in GIS. And it's, for the longest time, I don't think that the department was engaging the GIS community. We kind of took that approach. We are going to share our successes and our failures. We're all big GIS nerds, and we want to just meet other GIS nerds and talk about GIS. That's helped that as well.
Yeah, well, welcome to the club. Yeah, in terms of sharing, incidents happen regardless of lines and stuff. Do you see a pathway forward having more a regional approach? And I don't know how the politics of bureaucrats, and I know that a lot of it's just how the system's set up. Do you see like a pathway forward to being able to share or aggregate a certain amount of data regionally or in a larger setup pattern so that you start seeing patterns and then it provides the foothold or scheduling point to dive deep into solving a specific problem?
I don't know where this went at our department, but we've tried for years to set up a regional database where departments around us could contribute to this database or their closed cases or their active cases, even their incidents, so our analysts can analyze what's going on and things like that. I don't know whatever happened with that, if it ever got off the ground. I know there was issues with whether we were going to be showing or sharing closed cases or active cases. Maybe that would have been a reason why it never got off the ground. But there was ideas to actually solve that problem regionally. And that was a non-GIS solution that they were looking at. As far as a GIS, I don't think we're there yet. I don't think that we maybe... Ezra made it easier with distributed collaboration, and we can do it that way. But I don't think GIS is the entry point to where they're trying to get information from us. Mm-hmm. Our other city departments obviously are, and other GIS departments are certainly know where to come to us for that. But in general, I don't think outside agencies are saying, let's go hit up the GIS unit for sharing data to us. I don't know. What have you seen, Freddie?
It's one of those things that's... you're always worried about oversharing because then what comes back to you? Mm-hmm. An easy one would be like gang turfs. These are not authoritative gang areas. These aren't anything that is, these are just based on observations, reading crime reports, and saying, okay, these are generally where this gang operates. You start putting that out there, then somebody's going to say, you said this was this gang area. There's always the worry about that. I remember during Hurricane Harvey, I was at the division. I was trying to get a flood map of where Harvey impacted, like the inundation map to see where everything that was flooded. Mm-hmm. And getting that was difficult. And I never really even got, there was never an authoritative one. And nobody wanted to put it out because, oh, well, then this company will say, my business flooded and it's not, it doesn't show in your map. Government agencies are always real worried about that. I think ArcGIS Online definitely helps with that. A lot of the smaller agencies, they're moving towards the, I think they want to do enterprise uses where they have their own portal, but they're going to AGO because of the cost side of it.
Yeah.
If they have that, we're able to easily share. And we've had a few units. There was DPS that needed some information, and our analyst did it. And we pushed it through our city's ArcGIS Online. So we have a partnership with the city, and we use theirs to if we need to get something outside. I think a lot of law enforcement agencies, especially smaller ones, the cost of really getting in and sinking your teeth in, and the technical side required. It took Patrick a long time, and it's still an ongoing task of managing our servers and managing the data stores and what happens when something goes awry. I think a lot of departments will have to really invest in that approach before it'll happen.
Investing in an approach and then deciding how best to share the data itself, whether it's going to be a GIS solution through some ETL process or some other IT sharing, you know, ability that isn't using GIS. I just don't think we're there yet. Yeah. I haven't seen conversations where the floodgates are being opened, hopefully, but as long as it's done in a smart and responsible manner, I think it's doable, but we're not there yet.
I totally get it. Law enforcement has the same challenges here. And some of it, I think relates to, well, our CAD system is this, so, and our RMS system is in here. Mm-hmm. There's the CGIS gets thrown around. I'm not sure, still not sure what all the rules of CGIS and stuff. And when my law enforcement buddy throw out a bunch of acronyms, I just like fall asleep. Yeah, that must be important. Then I always remind them there's a car accident on the line. They always like measure out like what the maturity of the car accident is, on which side of the line it is, so who investigates it. Mm-hmm. I get the culture. I understand that. And my dad's retired law enforcement. My brother's law enforcement as well. I get digs and make fun of them with them on it, but different deal. So I get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, CGIS definitely does play a big part of like crime data. You want to make sure we collect all this information, that we're being good stewards of it and not having issues where wrong people get information that they shouldn't have.
Yeah, I always view it as like a Get Smart episode. You're walking through multiple doors, and then there's the cone of silence in the end when you're talking to each other. That's how I envision and play with it and stuff. So, you know, just
there's certainly a secret handshake that happens.
Yeah.
A couple other topics. Wait, one of them you may not even use, but I'm going to throw it out there. Patrick, you said you have a military background. You did some spatial analysis with the military. I'm assuming within the military, you are familiar with and use the military grid reference system?
Yeah, absolutely.
And have you implemented the U.S. National Grid at all within the city of Houston?
No, we haven't. And I've made, for Hurricane Harvey, I actually made some applications that were using the grid, just in case we needed to do some type of like SAR or something. But that was the only really case that came to fruition, is where I threw a grid on my applications in case we needed to tie in with like OEM or officers on the street, that I did that. I haven't seen anyone come to me asking for it, unless it was a very specific unit and they had military background themselves and they were looking for like a GRG as well. Then I would like do an application that had that kind of focus to it. Grid reference graphic is what GRG is. So that's typically what you use when you are having a top-down approach to satellite view, or somebody in a helicopter, and they can talk on the ground personnel on a target when you use something like that. And so there's been very few cases of that. Other than a Hurricane Harvey application, we haven't really used those type of reference systems.
My other question, the future of where you want to go with some of these applications, have you looked at any 3D mapping, any indoor mapping applications? And specifically, Chris and I have talked about potentially using like indoor mapping. We're not law enforcement, so we don't know, but one of the thoughts that we had with indoor mapping was an active shooter incident.
We have thought about that. It's funny enough, for two scenarios for using indoor mapping. Our downtown business district has tunnels, and we have a downtown division, patrol division, that responds to incidents, and part of that is in the tunnel. The tunnel is hard to navigate. There's no smart way to do it. So we thought about maybe creating some type of application where an officer could bring it up on a phone or something to see where an incident is going down at, and he could be routed to it, or some type of navigation for being down in the tunnels. And the tunnels have perfect Wi-Fi and all that kind of stuff. It was a thought that would help them get to the incident if they were ever down in tunnels. That was kind of one thought with using indoor. And another idea that we were kind of really happy to, or wanting to try, I don't know how we're going to do it, but our SWAT has a brand new complex that they can do different scenarios in. So our thought was to maybe get the CAD files from those, from the building, and ingest that into indoors, where we can get the different levels of the floors plans and everything, bring that in. We thought about combining that with another unit's ability to do 3D capturing of rooms. Think of real estate when you go to the websites and you want to go mm-hmm. inside the house. Yep. So our idea was, from at least for a SWAT anyways, and this was kind of going to be like our uses case for them, is to indoor, like do a drone around the building, get that ongoing, have the indoor floor plans ready to go, and they can click that room. That would take you right into the 360 degree camera capture of that room. They can move around in it. If they wanted to come back out, well, then it pop them right back into that floor plan view, and then they can navigate that way. So that's a really, what's the word, large project.
Ambitious.
It's a really ambitious project to take on, but it's something that we were really excited about possibly doing. And we've had that same question from other patrol stations or doing some of our other critical infrastructure, taking the indoor software and mapping that out for use during special events and things like that.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do drones for a while. I do it as on an enthusiast side. I have a couple drones myself. With our new ELA, we're supposed to be getting a couple drone to map license. So we'll be able to start doing that now. We're always having to be very careful on how we use drones. So it would just be from mapping out structures that a lot of times are going to be belonging to us or the city. We can better respond to incidents. Now, as time, one of the biggest things is just always time and how many people.
Yeah.
I mean,
we have
Patrick, myself, and another analyst that's on the unit. His name's Nick. And then we've recently got another sergeant who is training up right now, because that's going to take a lot of time to really learn how to do. And it's something that's very interesting. We have a whole list of projects that are in queue, and it's like, all right, do we have time to go and run?
It's really like personnel, managing the project, managing what we do daily, then to also move it forward. But something that we talk about, putting the places is a challenge as well. Things like Freddie said, the drones, indoor mapping.
He brought in the Vision Zero, the 3D model of Houston. That was a cool thing. Esri helped us map out a large part of Houston. There was a company that did a flyover of, and I don't know all the specifics, so I'll probably get some of this wrong, but they basically did a flyover of most of Texas and got LiDAR data in the cities. They got it pretty close. And there's also a couple of companies here in Houston that do ground level LiDAR that we've been able to access that data through partnerships with the city. We would love to be able to like 3D map out downtown and plan out, if we're planning out an event route, being able to see what line of sights, where are they going to put snipers, or where can you see what, where has coverage. These are all things that are on like our idea board, but it's just, you know,
right.
the time required is too great right now.
Yeah.
We're trying to implement live stream data mapping, and as well as looking for maybe specialized unit application for our SWAT and tactical operation units as well. The future is looking at those type of technologies, and our units would use it. We just have to feel that out and plan that out. But yeah, we're excited about some of the things that we can do and want to do.
I sit on a group with the NIST. They call it iAxis, but it's basically 3D building mapping. And one of the things they're trying to do is using interior LiDAR to map out buildings and creating point clouds inside a building. The challenge has been how to get it more of a geographic feature versus just a standalone separate product, if you will. But one of the challenges, and I kind of throw this out there, we have law enforcement representation. When I mentioned earlier that you guys are unicorns, you understand both, you know, you really are unicorns a little bit. The law enforcement and technology, it's really hard to find versus Steve and I are kind of a dime a dozen. Is there any like thoughts as far as like even related to that? What are some like key things that you would want to see related to that? Just kind of a brainstorming thing.
I think one of y'all mentioned it earlier. Ideally, it would be awesome to have for active shooter. The unit that went out and got a lot that brought the active shooter preparedness idea to us, schools are very wary of sharing. Yeah. They don't know how the information, you hear all the time about hacks and leaks and stuff of data. We can't just go out and take a 3D LiDAR of the school so we can have a plan, because they're worried to share that information, and rightfully so, especially in the era of data leaks. So ideally, it'd be awesome to have all of the schools that would want to participate 3D modeled with a drone and then bring in their interior. I know some of the businesses have even started doing like shot detection systems, gunshot goes off, tying into those features. One of the access we have is, you know, for 3D modeling of the LiDAR, we have ground level like up to 30 or 45 feet, being able to inundate. If we have flooding here, where does it propagate to? Mm-hmm. The uses are endless, as far as even SWAT being able to do a live stream into a web app where they're able to see the information that they see if we have a barricaded suspect or somebody that's held up somewhere. Those are all huge. They would change the way operations are run. The use cases are endless, really.
Yeah, definitely.
One question I have, Steve and I have this experience directly where I work for a smaller department. I wouldn't say small department, but it's on the small side. Steve worked for the second largest fire department in the United States, right behind Cal Fire, if you count that. We have different experiences as far as ability to leverage resources. And I'm pretty lucky that for a department my size, I'm resourced pretty well to help support GIS and technology. You guys in Houston are a huge police department as well. Do you have any like thoughts or comments? If I were a smaller department, and I'm sure, I don't know if you live in a smaller city, like what would you do or advice that you would give to smaller police departments to get started? And any advice that you can give to help a small to medium-sized police department to start?
It's certainly a challenge. There's a lot of departments that don't even have JS personnel in them, or it's just one person who really kind of likes it, but they're really relying on a planning department personnel to support. We've seen that a lot. If that's the case, if you are a department and you have your planning department is supporting your GS functions, I would start talking to them and how can we get GIS more integrated into the department, or where we can be more self-sufficient and get their supervisor on board to help foster that. It's all about the champions. You need to find those champions at all levels. And it's your immediate boss to their boss all the way up. You just keep on trying to get those champions, win those small battles, put out those small fires with those low-hanging fruits. That's kind of one way to do it. But if you have a department that is dedicated or has a unit or even a person that is dedicated to GIS, you have to play the long game. You really do. You really have to, like, change the culture and the mood of the department. This is how this technology can help our operations and workflows be more efficient. It can provide so much value to the organization. You can do that by showing them other use cases, trying to get them to conferences. And if you're that person who needs more assistance, well, then go to the conferences. There's tons of resources out there that GIS resources that you can use to get your skills better or to implement like a strategy in your department. There's a really good GIS managers or exec staff type of training that is done at the user conference every year, where it kind of gives you a strategy for implementing GIS and getting it used within your department.
We touched on this earlier of like really treating it like a small business, and that I think
that's the key.
Successful is really doing a lot, some pre-planning. You don't want to spend all your time pre-planning. You actually have to get out and do, but set a roadmap out for yourself. Where am I? Where am I trying to get? And set those milestones. Give yourself realistic timelines and updates, and then go out there and do it. You can't, like, I've heard before, and I haven't worked in GIS professionally before this, but I've heard a lot of places will sit in their GIS bubble and they'll do the work that they have to do, but they're not getting out there and marketing, not getting out there and talking to others in the department or whatever organization they're in and figuring out what I have to offer impact other operations. Because there's a lot of things, like, I look at almost all data that I've seen, and it's like everything has a spatial component. Once I started like really looking down the rabbit hole on how GIS can change everything, like Amazon uses it to track where the customer is, where the item is, and where the closest place is. It can change operations across the board. You really have to get out and talk to the other people in your organization. What are they doing? How can my stuff change their operation? Another thing that we did, we sat down and we said, like, who are we? What is our mission? We have a mission statement. We have a vision statement. We have guiding principles. We have a slogan. We have branding guidelines that determine what colors are used in our applications and our maps, what symbology we use, what font types we use, when we use these, what are our standard widgets and how are we doing these? Where are things even laid out on our applications? These are all things that lend to a lot more successful deployment of applications. Every application, you should be able to pick it up and know how to use it based on the previous application you've used, because everything is kind of laid out the same when we made it, because it is colorized, it was branded that way. And I think those are all things that lend to the success, because as Patrick said earlier, if you're giving out solutions that don't work, or half solutions that didn't quite do everything right, if there's a widget that they click on and it doesn't do anything, like, people are going to say, oh, this is not finished, I don't want to use it. They're going to toss it. It's very quick to toss technology. You have to make sure that what you're doing is like thought out.
Chris, I think that, like you mentioned, that coming from a large agency, and yeah, we are a large agency, but the GIS unit came from nothing. So there wasn't a unit. It was one senior police officer who was doing it for the entire department, and he retired. And that was the genesis of the GIS unit and basically standing it up from nothing. We did. I treated it as a tech startup, had to plan our path forward to success. And it took a lot of planning and a lot of failures. So it didn't 5 years later, I think that we finally got to where we want to be. And we're not going to rest on our laurels. We still want to move on and do better things. And that's kind of why Freddie and I are passionate about talking about law enforcement, public safety, and JS. We've gone through the pains. We've had, and that's what having the resources and the backup and all the kind of stuff that you mentioned, we had that, and we still have failures and we still had growing pains. If there's something we can do to help our fellow law enforcement agencies and our brothers and sisters out there, that's what we're going to do. Cool. It's really important to us. But yeah, I think that was to really think of it as a business approach, a business strategy, really lay it out how you're going to do it and what you're going to do and why you're going to do it and who do you need to help you do it. And then I think just keep on going and bring in. The thing is that, like Freddie said, don't be in your office by yourself. You can't do it alone. Don't be afraid to ask for help, whether it's within your department or your city cleaning department or whatever. That's what's important, is getting out of your office and making those relationships is what makes it successful. And then proving that, and I don't think it's hard. I don't think it's hard to show how GIS is useful to your operations. It's just getting the exposure is that what you really need to do. And then you just need to do it in a smart way where it doesn't fall apart on you. So that's where the planning comes from. But if you do that, yeah, I think it's very beneficial and you could be successful as well.
A huge benefit of doing all this planning beforehand, you can take inventory of what you'll know, what your roadblocks are going to get before it. Like for us, we're a large agency. Yeah. We have a lot of people that we can rely on, but with a large agency comes bureaucracy. Things move slower than they might at a smaller agency. There might be one tech person at a small agency and he can do a lot of the stuff. While here we're having to work with multiple teams and get things through a lot of different checks and balances. That goes with getting out and meeting the other people. And I think one of the big benefits too, and we try to do this frequently, is find the Esri's has that find the visionary, find the leader. But there are visionaries at all different levels. Yeah. You just have to find those people who understand what it can do, the potential. That was, I think, Patrick with me, is I was at the division I was really interested in, and he said, we have a pass to the user conference. And I went to the user conference. It was like, oh man, eyes wide open. At that
yeah, place. Yeah, evangelized there.
It showed you like a ton of ideas. So you have to find those people, because some people will just look at GIS as just a tool in their toolbox to do that task that they always do. But some people will look at it as a way to do things better. And if you find those
game changing. People, right.
I think that the pieces start to fall in place. You find those motivated individuals, and they're going to be excited to help you because they see the path.
One of the things about you guys is that I had this at the FDNY, and it's sometimes a little hard, especially with uniformed personnel, but you have that combination of a civilian personnel and a uniformed person. I always found that beneficial at FDNY. It was myself and my executive officer, Mike Brady, who, you know, we were both in uniform, but we had three civilian people. And especially initially, I had learned about GIS, but the civilians that I had working for me knew so much more. I learned from them. I learned rather quickly, but they didn't have that uniform experience either. So it was a nice combination.
I agree completely.
And I see that with the two of you as well.
I definitely, having no law enforcement or experience, TCLIS sense, not going through any type of academy, I definitely bounce things off of Freddie and other members of, you know, the division that we're in to make sure it's like passing the sniff test. This just makes sense. There's no need for us. I can grab an idea that I saw somewhere else, but I don't want to go down a rabbit hole knowing that, all right, it's not going to be used, or our guys, or maybe the culture of our department isn't going to use it that way, or whatever the case may be. So having a classified member in my unit is super important to, I think, also to the success of it as well. And then also to keep the civilian staff grounded and saying this is what's really important. Because ultimately, we want to make sure everybody gets home safe, right? Yep. And put the bad guys away. And if we can do that, and if we can help do that in any way possible, that's a good day for us.
I want to thank the two of you for doing this episode with us. I know me personally, I've learned a lot from the two of you in regards to GIS and law enforcement. I have seen webinars. I have done some blog reading about it, but this has been very insightful for me.
Well, yeah, thank you for having us on and letting us tell our story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris and Steve. We could, again, talk for hours about so many different topics, law enforcement, GIS related and non, but we're just excited again to talk to you and to the fans out there about what we do and how and why we do it, because it's certainly something that I'm very passionate about. And so I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it with y'all.
Thank you again.
This is Chris and Steve.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mapping Tech and Public Safety. Please visit our blog at mappingtechandpublicsafety.com.